Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Our topic today is a visit to Coyote Garden with Les Brake. Pretty challenging thing to do on the radio, don't you think? But we're going to make it work and it's going to be fantastic. Let me tell you a little bit about Les Brake. He's in Willow and he has three gardens in one. Just this last Monday, Memorial Day, he opened his garden to show off his early bloomers. Lots of primroses and unfurling ferns and the most amazing tall Chinese peonies from Nepal. In midsummer, he opens the garden again to a whole new array of showy summer foliage. And one more time in late summer, because he has a whole other batch of plants that bloom then. South Central and Alaska gardeners know of Les Brake. He teaches, mentors, shares plants and know-how all over the state. Magazines that feature beautiful gardens around the country and around the world have been to his garden at mile 7.5 of the Willow Fishhook Road, off mile 71 of the Parks Highway. He's out there with the moose and the bears. What a gift it is today to welcome gardener extraordinaire Les Brake to Hometown Alaska. Welcome, Les.
Hi, Kathleen. Good to talk to you.
So great to talk to you. And of course, I'm in a windowless studio in a basement, but where are you, Les?
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that, Kathleen. I'm sitting out on the deck in the warm sunshine. It's in the mid-60s, a beautiful day. I've got my shorts on and I'm drinking iced tea. Why don't you come out here and join me?
I think we should have gone remote with this show.
You should have.
But you know what? I'm going to invite all the gardeners in Anchorage who might be listening on, and our listeners to Hometown Alaska. Maybe they ought to go outside, take their radio outside or their, you know, iPad or their iPhone and listen to the show outside in their own garden. And we'll have this kind of harmonic convergence of gardeners listening to the radio. And one thing I want to tell folks is we have a slideshow of Coyote Garden on Alaska Public Media on the Hometown Alaska web promo. And so I would encourage you, if you're anywhere near a computer or an iPad or anything, that you open up that slideshow. It's got 33 beautiful images from Les's garden, taken just a couple years ago. It's not immediately current, but it's really got the feel and flavor of his garden there in the woods. So you can see it on our Facebook page at Alaska Public Media, or you can go to alaskapublicmedia.org, go to the Hometown web promo, and you'll find it there in the link section. It's awesome. It's so inspiring. And I think, you know, getting to see some of Les's pictures of his garden while he's talking about his garden would be a pretty fun thing to do. It's kind of like we're having a virtual garden tour here. So, Les, let's dip in a little bit with you. I want to invite our listeners to know that they can ask you questions. Your areas of expertise are flowers, planning a garden, landscape gardening design, but not necessarily lawns or vegetable gardens. I know you have a vegetable garden for yourself, but really your passion is blooms and flowers. So we really want to encourage people to feel that we want their questions here at Hometown Alaska. And here is the number if anyone wants to jump in and ask a real expert some questions. 550-8433 in Anchorage, or statewide, it's 1-888-353-5752. And of course, we welcome your emails to hometown@alaskapublic.org. So Les, I was just going to go ahead and start with some things that I want to know about. When I first heard about the opportunity of having you on the show, I heard, well, he's got three gardens in one. So I thought you could start telling us a little bit about, that's kind of your approach to having a garden, and what do you mean by that, and in reality, what is that?
Well, Kathleen, our season is so short in Alaska that I think we should take advantage of every single second of the season, pack the garden with as many blooms, as many flowers as we can get into it. So I layer a lot of my beds. There will be a spring show. I believe the bulbs and primroses, different spring bloomers belong everywhere throughout the garden. So there's a big spring show going right now, and then the summer perennials will take over. All of those early plants will disappear underneath the big summer show. And then there's another change in the garden starting about mid-August. I'll do a tidy up in the garden, cut back things, make it look fresh again. And then I plant a lot of things. I don't want everything to be over with by the middle of August. So I plant a lot of things. I push my peak as late as I can. I plant a lot of things for September bloom, a lot of the gentian family, which are absolutely beautiful in the autumn because that's when the birches are changing. So you have blue flowers and the golden birches. It's just a perfect combination together. So, and a lot of late ligularias, too, the Desdemona, Othello-type ligularias. are spectacular in the autumn. So I just believe in, I don't want to waste a minute of our season. It's too short, as I say, as it is. So I want something in bloom for the entire 5 month gardening season that we have here.
So essentially you have three peaks, really. You have a peak going on right now.
And then a summer peak, and then the autumn peak.
And I do want to throw out a little bit of information for people. I know your garden will be open for its summer peak. I think it's July 25 and 26, right?
That's right.
So that's an opportunity, and it leads us into a story, actually, about the Willow Garden Tours, and this is a Willow Garden Tour, but you're the only garden on the tour this year because it's a celebration for the 30th year of Willow Garden Tours. Do I have that right?
That's right. As to the best of my knowledge, Willow has the second longest-running garden tour in the state after the Anchorage Garden Club's tour.
Mm-hmm.
And we started that back in 1986 was the first year, so this will be the 30th year for a tour of Willow Garden.
And you got to tell me, Les, how long have you been at Coyote Garden there on mile 7.5 of the Willow Fishhook Road?
On the 31st of this month, just a few days away, I will celebrate my 31st anniversary here.
Oh, my. Congratulations. And did you garden right from the get-go?
I was not a gardener. I had dabbled. I moved up here from Denver, and I wouldn't call myself a gardener when I moved here. I had dabbled in plants. It was really my first long, white, boring winter in Alaska that turned me into a gardener. I give credit to my first January here. I was starved for color. I knew I wanted to be a gardener. I called a friend in Anchorage, Stephen Bunton, who has since passed away, but he was a big influence on me. I had 50 gardening questions for him, and he very patiently answered every single question and set me on the path, and the rest is history, I guess you could say.
Well, I read somewhere, I might have been in the Frontiersman, somebody writing about you that said you were walking down a street and saw his garden. Where was his garden, and what was it that struck you? This is a little downtown Anchorage garden, right?
That's right. Stephen Garden, one block on the other side of the Sheridan. It was a true cottage garden. He had chickens in his front yard, which I thought was so Alaskan. I absolutely love that here in our major city for Alaska, and there's chickens downtown.
Mm-hmm.
A true cottage garden concoction. There were flowers and vegetables mixed. But what really stood out for me were the massive stands of delphiniums, which I had never heard of before I moved to Alaska. And then he had a beautiful wall of sweet peas blooming in the middle of the summer, which you would never find down in the States. They just burn up in most places. I can still recall that. He had beautiful large red opium poppies that he planted on 1 foot centers. They were just meticulously planted. So I knew from my very first summer in Alaska that great gardens were possible here. It's not something I'd thought of before I moved up here, but as soon as I saw my friend Stephen Bunton's garden, I knew that great things were possible. And part of my philosophy is since Alaska means the great land, I feel like we have to garden up to Alaska. It demands great gardens is my approach.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so there's a challenge afoot here.
When you've got Mountain McKinley in front of you, that tells you something. You know, you have to garden up to that. So.
Gardens that match Mountain McKinley. So then you started out in Willow, and I'd love to know what your sort of beginner garden eyes were like. What were you thinking? When you looked out your yard there at what became Coyote Garden, what did you see, and how did you start to create a vision for a garden?
Well, I started, like most people do, close to the house, right behind the deck. I made 11 little ridiculous-looking rock beds. The snow melted that. A friend from Denver had sent me one of those mixed packs of 100 different bulbs, and in my ignorance about gardening and all things Alaskan, I managed to kill 98 of those 100 bulbs. But when the snow melted, I saw how goofy those beds looked, the 11 little rock beds. And so I connected the dots, basically. That's what I tell people, this is a connect-the-dot garden. I put those all together, and that gave me my first bed. And I just slowly expanded out. But it wasn't until about 1987 that I really started getting a garden vision. That's when I encountered a book called Visions of Paradise, and it exposed me to the idea of gardening as an art. I never knew that gardening was one of the arts.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually the most challenging art because you were dealing with living things and climate and all these things that we really have no control over.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when I really got my vision.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was also the same period when I discovered the books by Gertrude Jekyll, a great English garden writer who passed away in the 1930s. She was called the High Priestess of Color Control. I read her books over and over and over. She was a very opinionated gardener, and for a new gardener, that's exactly what I needed, was good, strong, firm opinions about gardening. And that's also when I discovered the writings of Graham Stuart Thomas, another great English gardener who's been called the practical master of modern gardening. And he gave me, when I give talks around the state, I have 12 or 13 ideas that have gone into the making of the garden, and at least half of those ideas came from Graham Thomas's books.
Wow.
So he had a major influence on the making of the garden.
Wow. And so what's interesting to me is here you are in Alaska, but you're not really using Alaska resources to develop your vision. You're using sort of classic, old, even from other countries, to develop your vision.
Well, the English, you know, they've been doing it for a long time. They ruled the world. They brought plants in from all over the world. And it was really the English who turned gardening into such a beautiful art form. So that's why I naturally gravitated towards English writers. But at the same time, Lenore Hedla was a big influence, too. She held my hand for the first several years, and she told me everything would be okay. And when I lost a lot of plants, she said it would be okay. That probably wouldn't happen again. She was wrong about that.
She's trying to keep you going.
For a long time. And she was really a role model. You know, she called herself a gardener's gardener. Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted to be. You know, I love that. I wanted our garden to be a place for gardeners to gather, a meeting place for gardeners. I still miss her. She's been gone a few years now, but I just love Lenore.
Wow. Well, you know, Les, I'm just thinking, listening to you, those books that you just made reference to, I think if you would email me those, I would get those up on our website. I mean, I think if anybody looks at your slideshow and becomes aware of Coyote Garden, they may be very interested in drilling a little deeper and kind of seeing your influences and maybe being inspired by them as you were. So could I get you to just drop me an email and I'll get those on our website tonight?
I'll be happy to do that.
That's awesome. Now, since you are such a resource, I would not mind talking a little bit about your 13 rules. First, I'm going to throw out our phone number one more time to our listeners, because Les is very willing. He's very much a mentor, very much willing to share information and hear information from gardeners. So give us a call at 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752 if you're outside of Anchorage. And we can also take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And I do want to let folks know, if you just joined us, this is Les Brake from Coyote Garden in Willow. Out there in the woods, he's gardening, and it's beautiful. I was there for a brief early season opening on Memorial Day, and it was just lovely. And we had everything that day, from rain, drenching rain, to sunshine. We ended the day sitting around Les's little, I guess you would call it, fire pit there in the garden, soaking up the sun at the end of the day. It was just really a nice day. So Les, why don't we maybe hear a little bit of those things that you've distilled as the critical things you really want gardeners to know?
Well, one of the first ones for me was it came from another great English garden writer. She was really a poet, not a gardener. Graham Thomas corrected me on that, but that was Vida Sackville West, and that was her principle of ruthlessness. I didn't know when I first started gardening that you could really move plants around. I think a lot of new gardeners don't know that. It's kind of common among newer gardeners, and when I encountered that principle of ruthlessness, that liberated me. And the way that Vida Sackville West puts that, she says that the purpose of gardening is to marry two plants happily together. And if they don't marry happily, one of them must be hoiked. That's all there is to it. Hoiked means get rid of it.
Uh-huh.
And that was so liberating, because I had, at that time, I had some of the later summer Trolleus, Trolleus letterburi, the more of a bright orange. And I had those next to some beautiful pale blue delphiniums, and it was really a clash. And I didn't know that I could move that Trolleus until I read that principle of ruthlessness. And, boy, out went the Trolleus, and everything was better after that. So that was important to me. That was definitely one of the 13 ideas of, and one of the most important ones, I'd say. That was one of the most liberating principles that I'd read about gardening.
One thing that
Graham Thomas contributed a lot was about color theory. I really didn't know how to use colors in the garden. When I first started gardening here as a reaction against the long white winter, I didn't care, to paraphrase Henry Ford, I didn't care what color a flower was as long as it was red. but what I realized was that that was overwhelming. And Graham Thomas's thoughts on that was that less is more when it comes to red. And I really have come to believe that that is very wise advice. Use a little bit of red, that goes a long ways.
Excellent. You know, Les, I'm going to interrupt here just for a moment because I am going to welcome on to Hometown Alaska Tina Garay from Homer, a gardening friend of yours I know. Hi, Tina.
Oh, good.
Hi there.
Welcome. Welcome to Hometown Alaska, Tina. It was Les's wish that maybe we would hear from you, and I really appreciate you taking the time to call in today. And I do want to ask you, where are you today? We talked earlier that I'm in a windowless studio. Les is out on his deck in shorts with iced tea. Where are you?
Actually, I came inside. I'm sitting in the living room, and I'm staring out at the view, which is beautiful today. It's clear, and I'm looking at the mountains and the bay.
Right. So were you out in your garden?
I was, but I was a little nervous that, you know, about this, so the last 20 minutes, I was in the house.
Nothing to be nervous about. One of the things I wanted to, since you're both on right now, Les introduced you to me as his soil mate, and
right.
He also told me that soil is one of the things he wants to talk about and wants to share, so I thought you guys could talk a little bit about soil.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Les is really the one that taught me that the soil is compost is really important, and he is a master at making compost. So Les is the guy to talk about soil.
Okay, so Les, go ahead. I mean, I have a compost pile, but I'm not proud of it. So how can I take it to the next level?
Well, what really got me going on the compost thing, Tina and I had taken a trip together along with another friend back in 1999. It was a 10-day tour of some of England's great gardens and up into Northern Ireland, into Ireland, and meeting with some of England's and Ireland's best gardeners. And what we saw, this was in November of 99, and what we saw everywhere we went, no matter if it was a public garden or a private garden, was every garden was being coated with about 7 inches of beautiful barnyard manure.
Oh.
And the last place that we visited, the last great garden, was Mount Stewart in Northern Ireland. And before we left, the head gardener asked if there was anything that I wanted from the garden, and there happened to be a blue poppy that was unavailable in the States. And when he went to dig that out, he didn't even really, he used a garden fork, but the soil was so loose and beautiful that he could have just pulled it out with his hands.
Mm.
And that's when I realized, that was a big light bulb moment for me. I knew that I was not putting enough goodness into the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I got very serious about, I didn't have access to barnyard manure, but what I had access to was a lot of birch leaves, and that became a main ingredient for my compost heaps.
You have to put carbon and nitrogen together, right?
So the leaves are your nitrogen.
They're your carbon. What's your nitrogen?
Well, that's going to be all the green then that I cut down from the garden in the autumn.
Okay.
Within just a few hours, when I'm making the compost heaps, when I'm doing the cutting and layering with birch leaves, by the end of the day, the heap will be up to about 150 degrees.
Wow.
It's astonishing to see that. And if a gardener is just wanting to start a new compost heap and doesn't have access to all of that, you can just take birch leaves and then buy alfalfa pellets, like at a feed store. That's your nitrogen. So you've got your carbon from the leaves and then your nitrogen, and then just do a layering, about 4 inches of birch leaves, sprinkle some alfalfa pellets, 4 inches of birch, and keep going till you've got a heap about 3 or 4 feet tall. Wet that down, and again, within a few hours, it'll be over 100 degrees inside.
Wow. And
that's a source of fast compost. And I came upon that. We had a wipeout year in 2002, 2003, when I lost about 70% of the garden. And I didn't just lose the garden. I lost a big source of my compost, too, the nitrogen part. And that's when I realized that if I use those alfalfa pellets, that I could make some really fast compost to make up until the garden built back up again, and I'd have that source of nitrogen.
Wow. Let me throw this out to you, Les. I have gone to coffee shops and gotten coffee grounds, and I've gone to a brewery and gotten spent hops. Do those sound like good ideas to you?
They do. It's something I've never worked with. I can't say for sure, but mm-hmm. It does sound good. Tina, have you had any experience with that?
Well, I haven't the hops. I have the coffee grounds, but I use we throw in our coffee grounds every single morning, and I think it just adds a little acid. Maybe
mm-hmm.
makes it for better soil, but
mm-hmm.
I don't think it hurts.
And
then Tina, you have access to seaweed down in Homer, right?
I do. We can go get kelp, and I don't use a whole lot of it, but I do use it. The worms hate seaweed, but it has a lot of nitrogen. Like anywhere I put it, it just instantly, within 2 weeks, turns, not instantly, but within 2 weeks, is green.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's a nice, it's nice. I like to use all kinds of stuff, just whatever kind of gets addicting. You pick up leaves and horse manure and whatever, and then have piles everywhere, like Les does.
Yeah.
Do you guys buy stuff? I mean, do you go to farms and buy manure, or you just make relationships and transactions?
That's right, relationships and transactions. Yeah. There's always somebody that has a horse, and I have chickens.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it's just everything you can use, grass clippings and... But Les's leaves, he's got the gold mine with those birch leaves.
Yeah, they are. I have them in my yard, and I'm re-inspired because I didn't think they were all that valuable. But now I'm really re-inspired, so that's
and
great.
And I like to mow them. I think it chops them up quicker.
Yeah, I was wondering, Les, when, you know, like at the end of the season when you're cleaning out your garden and you have all those stalks and things, do you have a chipper or do you break things up? For your compost?
No, what I'll do, I use a garden fork a lot, for a lot of different, to me that's the best tool that a gardener can have. That a Kiwi gardening friend of mine who lives up in Talkeetna, another Kathleen, was the one who told me to get a garden fork, and it is the best tool, and it's sharp. And so when I'm turning the heaps, I'll use that, I'll run it sideways, just chop things up with that. But I like to have, personally, I like to have chunkier compost. I think it makes for better drainage. A few years ago, a fellow brought some compost up for me to look at, and it was as fine as coffee grounds. It was beautiful, but to me, that would make the soil, I think of it as puddling up. We get so much moisture in Alaska, we need drainage, and so I leave a lot of that chunky stuff in mine.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, how about you, Tina? Same thing for you?
Well, I'm a lazier gardener than Les. I mean, he
no,
has way
not.
More stamina than
that.
I do. And I don't turn my piles hardly at all. I mow everything. I mow even the things I cut down because we cut down our stuff differently. He does it all in the fall. But I don't have snow, so I leave mine. It's not reliable, so I leave my greens up. And then when I cut it down in the spring, it's brown. And then I mow it, and then I add that to my mowed leaves and just alternate levels of stuff. And then I rototill my compost. I leave it for such a long time over winter, then I just rototill it, which
wow.
I just did today.
I've never heard of that. I'm going to throw out our numbers for listeners just because these guys are experts on compost. So if you're like me, a novice, you might have a question. Give us a call at 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752. Or we can take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. We have Tina Gray on from Homer, who's a very good gardening friend of our guest today, Les Brake, the curator, the mentor, the creator of Coyote Garden up in Willow. Let's see. I wanted to ask you, Tina, since we're lucky enough to have you on, what's going on with gardens in Homer this summer? Are there some big attractions that maybe Anchorage gardeners might be interested in knowing about?
Well, there's the garden tours. That's, I think it's in August 3rd this year. I think it's earlier. Or maybe it's August 1st. Les, doesn't it conflict with
yeah,
your Willow speaker
day.
With
it's
Dan
August
Hinckley?
1st, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's always fun, you know, to see local gardens. Our gardens are so different here because of the maritime influence, and we don't get as hot as Willow.
So what are your...
gardening, but it's... I guess that's the main thing. It's always fun to see other people's gardens and how they do things.
Go ahead. I just wanted to ask Tina, is there like a Homer Garden Club website that people could easily find that information on?
There is. There is a Homer Garden Club website, exactly. And you might even, you know, internet search the garden tours.
Yes.
Homer Garden Club garden tours of August.
Okay. And go ahead, Les. I interrupted you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. Tina, who's going to be the speaker down there for Gardeners
you
Weekend?
You know, I don't know because I know I'm not going to be able to make it just because it conflicts with Dan Hinckley's talk.
Okay.
Because I know Dan. I'd, you know, I'm going to go to that. And
why don't you guys tell people who Dan Hinckley is?
Tina, why don't you give a review of Dan?
Well, Dan Hinckley is an amazing plant person and has introduced so many wonderful, oh my gosh, plants, shrubs, trees, vines, and he travels all over the world. And the Alaska Rock Garden Society, we nine of us traveled with him to China and Yunnan, and we collected seed for our hardy seed for cold climates. And Dan's just a wonderful plant person, so he's really knowledgeable, written a couple books. What else can you add, Les?
Well, I think that, to me, I think of Dan as America's green giant. I don't think there's any other figure that fills bigger shoes than Dan. From what I understand, he has introduced more new plants to American gardens in the past 30 years than any other gardening figure. He has a tremendous number of loyal friends around the country. There's really no other figure in the gardening world that matches Dan Hinckley in my book.
And since he's going to come to our state in the summer, we might as well throw out that date for folks and remind them where they can check on that on the web if they forget, because it's pretty unique that he's coming here this summer.
Yeah, it is. Dan loves coming to Alaska. He's more relaxed up here. He loves Alaskans. I think this will probably be about his fifth trip to Alaska. He's never spoken in Willow, though, before, so this is a real feather in the cap for the Willow Garden Club. He will be giving his talk on August the 1st at 1:30 p.m. at the Willow Community Center, which is at mile 70 on the Parks Highway. And tickets for that can be obtained online. It's in a site called Eventbrite. People can go to the Willow Garden Club blogspot, and there's a link there that will take them right to that Eventbrite website. I believe tickets are $12. And I would encourage people to get their tickets early because that could sell out.
I'm just thinking, how big is the Little Willow Garden Club? And if this guy's world famous, I mean, are you going to be able to accommodate people coming? Do you expect people to come from around the state?
We've got friends coming from Fairbanks. There'll be friends coming from Homer. Yeah, because he's spoken so many times and he has such a reputation, it will be a big. Our club only has about 30 members, but I think we've got 175 tickets for sale. We should be able to give him a good audience here.
And do you guys meet like in a little log cabin up there in Willow or what?
No, we usually meet at the community center, and that's just during the week. And we wouldn't have taken this on had we not felt like the club would be up to it. But under the leadership of Marcia Van Abel and Cindy Forsyth, our two co-chairs, our club is very strong and very healthy, and they get things done. We've never been in this good a shape, so we knew absolutely that the Willow Garden Club could pull this off. Very professional group, and we're very excited about Dan coming up to do this.
Well, that's great, and I think it's an asset for Alaska gardeners to know someone like that will be in the state. And by the way, when I was reading up on the Willow Garden Club and also on Coyote Garden, I just want to mention that I noted that over the years, sort of donations to Coyote Gardens has gone to lots of gardening entities, the Alaska Botanical Garden in its early years, the Alaska Rock Garden, even the New Orleans Botanical Garden after the hurricane, and most recently, the oldest public garden in Alaska, the Georgeson Botanical Garden in Fairbanks. So, I mean, you gardeners, you really stick together. It's the gardening mafia, right?
That's right.
Well,
I used to read about English gardeners who would open their gardens for different groups, but it was never for horticultural groups. It was like for the retired nurses associations or owners of dead chihuahuas or things like that. And I thought, why not give it to gardening groups? You know, if you open your garden, that just made no sense to me. So that's what we're not a social club, you know, but for any gardening group, I'm happy to do that.
Well, that's great. And, you know, we're coming up on our half hour and we're going to take a little break. But, Tina, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to call in, share some of your composting tips. And it was just fun to hear you and Les, you know, sort of two old gardening friends talk about what matters to you. I could keep you on longer and talk to you about coastal gardening and Homer, but we'll have to do that another time. But I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to call in.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And Les, it's always fun to chat and talk our talk with Les. Sometimes only we can understand each other, I'm sure.
That's right. Dean and I can talk for 2 hours on the phone. We really love gardening. We can just talk and talk and talk. Good to talk to you, Tina.
Right.
Yeah. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Tina. So we'll take a little break now. You're listening to Hometown Alaska, and this is Kathleen McCoy.
Our license plates can be scanned from just about anywhere. So what can be done with all those scans?
Law enforcement could get a much better picture of our individual movements and with enough data, predict where we might be or when we might leave our home or when we might be at home, for instance.
Concerns about the government storing and analyzing license plate data. Today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen on alaskapublic.org.
It could seem hopeless to portray what we love about spectacular outdoor places in photos. Most of us try and don't come up with much that's worth sharing. I'm Charles Wolforth. On the next Outdoor Explorer, my guests are photographers Dan Bailey and Carl Battriel, who have dedicated their lives to making amazing pictures that not only show outdoor adventures and scenery, but also convey the feeling of these special places and moments. We'll learn about their work and get tips for your pictures. Join us Thursday at 2, repeating at 9 on KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and we are on the air today with Les Brake. Hi there, Les. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good.
Awesome. And it was really fun in the first half hour. We were able to pull in a gardener from home or an old friend of yours, a soil mate, as you say, Tina Garay. So thank you, Tina, for joining us for a while. And Les, we're going to continue on with you. I'm going to throw out the phone numbers. My guess is that people are so happy to hear from you and hear some of your learnings and ideas that they're just listening, but they can call in with questions about flowers and design of a garden and just how you evolve as a gardener and even how to give a garden sort of a spiritual dimension. So give us a call at 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752 or send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. I might remind listeners that at alaskapublic.org at the hometown promo on the site, we do have a slideshow of Coyote Garden. So if you're curious about and you haven't visited this garden up on the Willow Fishhook Road, take a look because you may be inspired to jump in your car and go out there and take a look and just get some of the wisdom and benefit of a gardener who has been tilling out there for, I think you said 31 years, right, Les?
That's right.
That's awesome. You know, I do want to go through some more of your 13 things that gardeners must know, but I know that Alaskans love a bear story or a moose story, and we had some discussions when I was up there. A unique remedy you have for keeping moose out of your garden that you've used before, and also some pretty amazing bear encounters. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Okay, Kathleen. Last summer we had by early June, the moose usually head up into the Talkeetna Mountains. Every once in a while, though, and last year was one of those years, the moose persisted, hung around in the garden until July. We had 6 different moose that were really causing some problems. I had several very close, scary encounters with moose. And as it got closer to the open garden benefit in late July, I tried to work to keep the moose out of the garden. And what I had to do last year was keep a fire burning. I've got a fire pit right in the middle of the garden. And moose won't come into the garden if there's smoke or they hear popping noises from a fire. So day and night, for 19 days and 19 nights, I had to keep a fire going. And we had some tremendous rains. We had 1 3-day rain, and it was a struggle to keep a fire going, but I was determined. And the only moose that entered that garden that entire period was one that was chased across the garden, probably by a bear. Didn't really want to come in, but just was running across the garden.
That was a better alternative than the bear.
That's right. So,
yeah.
But yeah, then a couple of years ago, there had been a mom, a mother moose, and 2 calves. We have a pond next to us, and they would hang out in the pond, and it was about 1 o'clock in the morning. I heard splashing out in the pond. I was about to go to bed, and I ran out to the edge. I thought I was going to get to see the mom and the calves, but what it was a grizzly after one of the calves headed right in my direction.
Oh.
And for some reason, that calf knew that if it stayed in the water, it had a slightly better chance of surviving. And so right before the bear ran it up onto the shore, it took a turn. But had that calf come up on the shore, I probably wouldn't be here to be talking. That was the scariest encounter I've had with a grizzly out in the garden. I know that bear would have killed me. It would have thought I was after its late night snack.
So, competition for that little calf. Oh, wow.
That's right. And I used to have, we still miss her. We lost her. She was a beautiful old Siamese. But she saved me from a bear. It was a black bear. And whenever we'd have a bear around, she would stand straight up in the air. And one evening, again, it was quite late, getting sort of dusky out, and I had been using fish fertilizer, and my watering can had holes in it, leaked, and I had this fishy smell all over me, and I kind of got a creepy feel, and I thought, this isn't too good. So I went in and washed up a little bit, made a cup of tea, and came back out on the deck, and sure enough, a big black bear was walking up the driveway. He thought he had detected a 160-pound land salmon out here, and that little Siamese cat, she saved me. She was standing straight up. That's how I knew that there was a bear approaching, and I actually saw her chase a black bear. She was actually a tiger trapped in the body of a Siamese. I saw her chase a black bear out the driveway and chase a moose out the driveway. So we still miss that little cat.
Well, so everybody thinks gardeners lead a very placid, peaceful life, but it's not true when you're gardening out there in the woods. You encounter all of this, and you do not have any sort of wire perimeter, or you're really open, right?
Yeah, I never wanted a fence around it. You know, the moose, the animals, they've been here. They were here a lot longer than I'll ever be here. They'll be here when I'm gone. So I wanted really to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I just say that we share this garden.
Mm-hmm. And I also, from visiting your garden, I noticed it's really bordered by these beautiful birch trees. So you have a backdrop for your garden. Is that intentional, or is that just what you have to do when you clear part of a forest to have a garden? Or is that part of your design?
You know, it was actually a gardener who lived in Anchorage who pointed out what beautiful garden walls I have. I hadn't been able to see. It was one of those. I hadn't been able to see the forest for the trees. But there was an Anchorage gardener who visited out here a long time ago, and she commented about the beautiful walls that the garden has. She said what she had was electric wires, and there was a car supermarket across, all of these other things that were in her garden view, and we had none of that. You know, we were just totally surrounded by the forest, so she really gave me that appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, my partner Jerry has really been good about opening up some of the birches to bring those out. It is a nice blend of the black spruce and then the white trunks of the birches that we have. And right in this area, a lot of willow is either one or the other, but we're in this area that we have both of those. So it does make for a beautiful backdrop.
You know, something you said the other day when I was out there, I was commenting, you have really nice footstones, pathway, and it's just gorgeous, and it's something, and it has moss in between the stones. And so we started talking about why you have the moss and let the moss be there, and the stones are there, and that everything is from Alaska, and you sort of garden from the state of Alaska, as opposed to, although you do bring plants in from exotic locations that will do well here, but you really sort of thrive on the elements that are here. And is that part of your philosophy? Did you come to that?
It is, Kathleen. I think that if by using local materials, you tie your garden to the greater landscape. A gardening friend of mine, an editor for Horticulture Magazine, used this expression, a garden that's snug in its setting. And I loved that. That was the goal for me, to make not a garden apart, and that's why the garden is blended into the natural surroundings.
Oh, I like that. A garden that's snug in its setting.
That's a beautiful expression, isn't it?
It is.
I have stolen it from her.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's flattery for her. By the way, Les, I have an email that came in from Sandy. She says she's really enjoying the show and listening to it. And her question is that they heat their home with a wood stove, and she's wondering about the ashes. Can they be used to enrich garden soil?
For a long time, we heated with wood for about 10 years, and I would coat, this was something, an idea from Lenore Hedla, to spread ash out over the snow in late spring to get it to melt faster. And so I've put a lot of wood ash into the garden. I think you have to be careful, you don't want to put too much, but most soils in Alaska are very acidic, and that will sweeten them a bit. So, yeah, I would definitely encourage some use of wood ash.
Mm-hmm. I feel like when I was in your garden the other day, I felt like I could see some of it a little bit on some edges of some beds. So I thought, oh, I bet you're doing that. But versus you do not want to use charcoal ashes from a charcoal grill, right?
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, I think I've read about that. Les, you talked about the fertilizing with fish, whatever it is. Is that something you recommend and still do, or have you moved on to something else?
That scared me so bad with the bears, but a number of my friends use this. I think it maybe even comes from down in Homer, I'm not sure, but it's some sort of a fish stuff, salmon bone stuff, and it makes beautiful gardens. It smells bad for a few days. But gosh, it really makes for beautiful gardens.
But if you're someplace like you are, where a bear is likely to be a visitor, you might want to think about that twice.
Yeah, and I've seen a garden, a friend of mine down the road, a few miles down. I went to see her one time, and all the plants were sticking out of the ground at funny angles. And I asked what had happened. She had actually put salmon in the ground, and a bear had smelled that and come in. So, you really have to be careful with where you are.
Okay, Les, we've got a caller, Stacy. Welcome to Hometown Alaska, Stacy.
Hi, thank you.
Go ahead and ask your question.
I was just going to ask if you have any tips for a smaller space. You know, if you're designing into a smaller, like a in-town lot.
I would say cut it up, and it sounds strange, but if you'll cut it up into several spaces, it'll actually make it look larger.
Okay.
The back part of our garden I call the tea house garden, and I did a sunken area in there that has a bench in it. It's a circular shape. That was an idea from some friends from back east. They said a circular shape is always pleasing. And then I did it sunk, and I dug out about 8 or 12 inches of soil, and then again brought down rocks from Hatcher Pass, and so there's a bench there. And that's divided, actually, divided into three different areas, you could say. There's a large expanse of moss at the back, and even though it might seem kind of contrary to what you would think, that actually makes it seem larger. And then a number of years ago, back in 2001, I put in a garden for my mom down in Texas, and she had a very small backyard, a postage stamp size. But we did the same thing. We made basically three different areas there, and so it makes it look larger.
Oh, thank you.
That's interesting.
And there are at least two very good books that I've seen. So go to the libraries and look for books on small gardens. There's a couple of very good ones. One is by, I think his name is Sir Roy Strong. I would definitely recommend that book.
Roy Strong. Okay, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
So I was really listening to that, Les, because I have a square backyard, very flat, and I don't want grass anymore. I that's why I was lusting after your stone walkways, because I'm imagining, having moss and stone and a fire pit in the middle of the, sort of having a fire pit somewhere in the middle, and I've got a garden that's kind of a kitchen garden that's got rocks around it, to make its edge. But what I noticed when I was in your garden is that you elevate your beds so they kind of rise gently, and so you get some elevation and you break up that flatness. And that was an idea I took away from you. That may be not novel to you, but for a beginner like me, I notice things like that. So I don't know, how long did it take you to understand how to create texture in your garden?
Well, I think that it was probably, again, Lenore Hadlow talking about raised beds, how that they drain and warm up faster in the spring. That just seems very important in a place like this. That's one of our greatest limiting factors is the cold soil.
Mm-hmm.
And by raising those beds up, they definitely drain and warm up faster in the spring. So that's, I think, it wasn't an original idea. If I might, too, I never use the word create. I don't know if it's because I was raised in the Bible Belt and I don't want to steal any of God's thunder, but I'm taking things that were freely given. So I didn't make the rainfall. I didn't make the sunshine. So if any friend or anybody ever hears me use the word create, they have my permission to douse me with a bucket of ice water. Back to reality.
Okay, I used it. You didn't use it. So I'll take it back, and I'll just say that you curate, you cultivate, and I'll take
away.
I make
or construct. rock. That's not, there's a lot of other words that are, you know, just as good there.
Right. No, that's, I think that's fair. You know, another, you were just mentioning Lenore Hedla, and the other day when I was up in your garden visiting for the open house, you were talking about having a garden filled with other gardeners, and it was because gardeners share plants, and you were sort of saying, I've got some Doug Trick, I've got some Lenore Hedla, I've got some Verna Pratt. I thought that was just really lovely, and also it speaks to the community of gardeners and what they do with each other. They share.
It's one of the most generous groups of people you could hang out with.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, we're doing it in self-defense. If I lose a plant, you know, if I've given a piece away to somebody, I know that I have a good chance of. So, you know, it's not totally out of an altruistic spirit that we do that. But gardeners are a very sharing bunch of people.
So if you happen to kill that plant in your garden, you have a friend who might have a healthy one that you can...
That's right. It's just a backup for
you. Yeah, yeah. And we should probably, you know, give a shout out to all those gardeners that have really helped you, and I mean, Lenore, Doug Trick. Anybody else you want to mention? Because those are some of our real assets here in Alaska.
Well, Carmel Tisver has represented, she's been the president, I think, of every gardening organization in the state. Uh-huh. She's given me good plants. I've got some things from Aline Strutz, Ermalie Hickel's mom. I've got a rose from her, and a Cotone aster that came from her garden. So that takes me way back.
Yeah.
I actually came from Mrs. Strutz before she passed away, which really meant something to me.
Oh, that's so, very special.
You've always got those memories of people that are in your garden.
Right.
I've killed a lot of people in the garden, too, which always makes you feel guilty.
Well, we don't want to talk about that. Listen, Les, I have another caller. Jim, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi, Kathleen. This is Jim Kerr, and I have a question about moss, because I don't like to mow the lawn, and it works really good in the patio, but I haven't, I put up some more stones in a path to get rid of more lawn, and I'm trying to think of how to get moss to grow in between the stones, and anywhere else for that matter.
Just keep it wet.
Keep it wet?
Yeah. And it lacks the
really dry. I noticed that my patio is kind of looking brown in between the stones there where the moss is. But I have another question. Is there any other advice? Just keep it wet and in the shade? Is that what they say? Or?
Well, even it's mainly acidic soil and very compacted soil, too. And just be patient with it.
Oh, okay. I have another question. These stellar blue jays, they tend to come along in our flower pots and any kind of pots that we have out with anything in them, and they put these peanuts in the shell that they get from feeders into our flower pots, and then, you know, and in the process pull up all this, our flowers, not all of them, but, and then they come back and then they try to get the peanuts out and yet make a bigger mess doing that. Do you have any advice for keeping those pests away?
No, it's not. I feed those stellar jays. I love having them around, but I've never had them digging in my pots.
Do you feed them peanuts? Don't feed them shelled peanuts. I guess that's my
No, I feed them. I feed them recycled cat food.
What's recycled cat food?
It's just the food that the cat doesn't eat that goes out to the birds then.
Oh, okay. It's not the cat food
that... And then the cats eat the birds, so it's just all a recycling process.
Okay. Well, I'm with you, Jim. I want stones and I want moss in between the stones. And boy, do you have beautiful moss out there in Willow. And that's indigenous moss, right?
Yeah, yes. It is. That back at the back, it is a large expanse of moss. It kind of came in accidentally. I knew it was too shady to garden back there. It was on the north side of the forest, and moss started coming in. And so just twice a year, I'd go through with a weed whacking stick and cut down all the little trees, anything else. And now that moss is a foot thick. It's my favorite place to work in the garden. I still have to go through and do a little tidying. I always have my happiest thoughts out there. It's just very peaceful, very relaxing place.
Oh, it's true. And it's soft and round. I mean, it's just the most beautiful moss. I mean, are there different kinds of moss, Les?
There's quite a few different types of moss. And you know, that's what this expression that, you know, East and West will never meet. They do meet here in Alaska. And I realized a long time ago that, you know, the Japanese don't have a patent right or patent or a copyright on moss and stones. You know, we're all welcome to use those.
Mm-hmm.
This really is where East and West meet.
You know, I started the show less, and we still have 10 minutes or so, but I was thinking about how is it to do a garden tour on the radio when there's no pictures. But I remember a story that you told me the other day when we were up in your garden. It might have been you or it might have been one of your guests, but we were looking at the Chinese peony. And when I first saw it, I thought, wow, what is that? Is that a bamboo? Because it has these long uniform stalks. And of course, the leaves didn't look like bamboo, but it looked like a bamboo plant. And he said it's really fast growing. It comes from Nepal. And this is the part about the radio, because he said, you know, it comes up a couple of inches and then it just starts shooting up and you can actually hear it growing. And I thought, wow, well, we got to do that on the radio. So. And yours was just loaded with these blooms that were about to burst open. So maybe
started blooming today, Kathleen.
Oh.
And that plant, 1 month ago, that plant was at ground. It is the most amazing plant to grow. That's Peonia vichii. It comes from about 12,000 feet in the Himalayas, the same region that the blue poppies come from. A month ago, it was just at ground level. It's 30 inches tall now and blooming.
Wow.
It throws it because it comes from a short season place. It knows what it has to do. I consider that the best peony for Alaska's gardens because it blooms so early that it reliably sets ripe seed for me every year. I've got lots of babies in the garden. If you lose the big modern hybrid peonies in a bad winter, there's nothing left to replace it. But if you lose one of these peonies, there's always babies left behind. So to me, this is the number one peony for Alaska's gardens.
That's great. Is that something gardeners can find less? Is it becoming known?
We'll have a few of those. We'll have maybe 20 of those at the Open Garden Benefit in late July. Florine Carney at Snowfire Gardens in Wasilla usually has a few for sale also. Those would be the main two sources.
Okay. It's something people can watch for. You know, something you said to me that was really startling was you said, I spend about $300 a season on my garden. That's about it. And there was a reason why you're able to do that. And it gets to this question of seeds and your whole view of seeds. I thought that might be a valuable thing to talk to people about.
That's right. This garden has been made on a shoestring. We are blue and green-collar workers out here, so I didn't have a lot of money to throw into the garden. But my friend Stephen Bunton, who I mentioned earlier, who was such an inspiration, he's the one who encouraged me to grow my own plants from seed, and that was the single best piece of advice that I've been given. That's why I've been able. You know, I got to think about that $300. I think that's probably actually high. I think I probably do it on $250 or under every year.
That's amazing. I can spend that at a garden shop in one day.
That's right. You buy five hanging baskets and you spend that.
Yeah.
By doing it from seed, you know, you can get 100 plants out of a packet of seed. Plus, you know, you really understand the miracle of the whole thing. To see a little seed the size of a fleck of pepper turn into a 7-foot delphinium. It's, you know, you get to see the whole process.
It's pretty stunning, yeah. Les, I'm going to throw out our numbers one more time, just in case there's last-minute callers who've been thinking about what they want to ask you. 550-8433-1888-353-5752, or an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Let's see. There were so many good topics to talk about. You told me a story about what isn't doing well in your garden now, used to really thrive, and it got us thinking and talking about how the weather changes, how climate is changing, and you do have some sensibility about that things that were successful years ago really aren't so successful now. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Okay, Kathleen, I do record some of the weather statistics. I record snowfall, I record anything below zero in the winter, and then anything above 70 in the summer. It kind of gives me an idea of what the year is like. Over the years, we're not getting nearly as much snow in Willow. We don't get that early October snow like we used to. So in some ways, gardening seems more challenging, more nerve-wracking to me. For a long time, I used to be able to grow the biennial foxgloves and the biennial verbascums, but those have pretty much been taken off of my plant list because I don't get that early snow cover. They're frozen out by the time we do get snow. So I've lost a lot of my good, strong verticals that I used to use in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, because the temperatures are milder, And Julie Riley and I have talked about this, plants such as astilbe. We would never have considered a hardy perennial when we first started gardening here, but that's definitely on our hardy perennial list now. So, you know, there's some gains and some losses with the changing climate.
Yeah. Les, do you use those row covers? And, you know, you did talk about raised beds allowing the soil to warm up sooner. Do you do anything else with, you know, I see those billowy white covers laying on some of my neighborhood gardeners' gardens.
I admire people who do those things. I've never done that.
Okay.
Every once in a while, we'll throw a piece of plastic over the vegetable garden just to kind of warm that up a little early, because I like to get those in before I start with the flowers. But that's about the extent of it.
Right. Okay. So you
and sometimes in the fall, and it's so ugly. But if we're going to get a hard frost early, and there's some things I want to protect, I save old bed sheets, and I'll take some sheets out, you know, just to protect. But
yeah,
it's not pretty.
You know, Les, do you have a favorite time of day or favorite spot in your garden that you've got beautiful garden furniture that your partner makes? It's just gorgeous, these willow benches. But is there a spot that you go and spend time in?
I like the evening light best, from about 6 until 7:30. I think a lot of gardeners would tell you that. I think that's my favorite time to take photographs. And I like to sit right in the center of the garden for that, around the fire pit.
Nice, very
I've
nice.
I've got a morning bench that I go to sit in the morning to catch the rays. That's, people who are really observant will kind of notice that most of the benches have been positioned to take advantage of the sun here. We have very few spots in the shade. I want to be in the sun as much as I can.
Oh, that sounds great. Let's remind folks that your garden will be open for public viewing again on July 25 and 26, I think, right?
That's right. On the 25th, the hours are from 10 until 5, and then noon until 5 on the 26th. And again, this year, the proceeds will be split between the Willow Garden Club and the Georgian Botanical Garden in Fairbanks.
When you say postseason, what do you mean? It sounds like postseason play.
Oh, no.
In other words, do you have a September or an August opening as well?
I don't. I've never done one of
those.
I'd love to do that to show people what's blooming here, but that is so iffy with first frost. I've just
you can't count on it.
It would have to be something that would have to decide to do kind of at a last-minute type thing.
Yeah, okay.
But my favorite, I will mention my very, because a lot of people say, what's your favorite plant? A lot of gardeners say they don't have a favorite. I do have a favorite. It's the willow gentian, Gentiana asclepiata. It's blue, gets 30 inches tall. Again, it blooms in August and September. Into October, it'll bloom down to 22 degrees. And
wow.
And to have those blues, when the birches are changing, it's just the most beautiful flower. So that, for a long time, I would say it's in my top 10 favorite, and then it went into the top 5, and then the top 3, and I couldn't really think of anything I liked better. So that's my favorite plant.
You know, when I was up in your garden, I heard you telling someone the story of the terrible winter when you lost 80% of your garden, and was it this gentian that pulled through, and that's when you really realized how hardy it was?
That was, it was actually a little Androse seed that survived that winter. The ground had frozen 10 feet deep that winter. All the bulbs were killed. Almost everything was killed. But there was this little alpine plant. That was a big light bulb moment. That's when I realized that alpines, that was what led to the formation of the Alaska Rock Garden Society. That's when I realized that alpines are meant to take some of the worst conditions on the planet. They're really tough plants.
Oh, wow. Well, Les, we've just got about 30 seconds. I guess I would say, if you want to leave folks with one quick garden thought.
Just garden. Just go out and garden.
don't fret about it. Just go out there and do it. That's how you learn.
That's it. Absolutely. You've got to lose some plants, you know, to find the winners.
Yeah, yeah. And join
plant societies and associations. That's where I've gotten so many of my good plants. Hang out with other gardeners.
That's a wonderful, wonderful suggestion. And we've got some great gardening groups here in Alaska. So
we absolutely do. There's everything here.
Oh, well, thank you, Les, so much. What a great show. And thank you to our listeners and callers. Special thank you to our guest, Les Brake, sitting out in his garden in Willow as we speak, sipping his cool beverage, I forget, iced tea. And thanks also to collaborators today, Tina Garay of Homer. Charles Wolforth will be your host next week on Hometown Alaska. far from a gardening topic, it's a very difficult and chilling topic, sexual assault, how to avoid being raped, and what to do if you are raped. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Dave Waldron is our web editor and audio engineer. Have fun gardening this summer, and thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.